Welcome to the Food and Faith Podcast, conversations from the soil and around the table with your co-hosts, Sam Chamlin and Anna Woofenden.
Hello, Food and Faith Podcast. Welcome back to episode 3. And we're really excited to have you back. And I'm really excited for the interview that we have for you today. A friend of mine who I've known for many, many years and indeed was instrumental in my own formation, not only as a pastor and a public speaker and all those kind of things, but just as a human being. My dear friend Jennifer Reynolds, who is the coordinator for equine and poultry extension activities with the University of Maryland. And Jennifer and I today are going to be sitting down and talking about county fairs and the role of county fairs in the life of a community, and also the spirituality behind some of these places that maybe we don't expect to see spirituality. But before we dive into that, Anna, I want to ask you, I love county fairs, and so wondering if you have any experience with a county fair or 4-H, FFA, anything like that at all?
Yeah, so when I was, 8 or 10, I did 4-H for a very brief period of time, and to be honest, I don't remember what it was that I took to the county fair, but I do remember the excitement and the anticipation and preparing for it. And I've got a, like, third place prize, which I probably still have in a box somewhere.
I was going to say, do you still have the ribbon? You at least have a ribbon somewhere.
I think I've got a ribbon somewhere in an attic somewhere.
Do you remember the fair? What was the fair?
It must have been the Skagit County Fair.
Awesome.
But the thing that I remember the feeling of it, and the feeling of just all these different interesting people and the animals and the excitement of it. And there's something that even just in the memory gets me like, oh, right, county fair. That's something to be excited about. So you hearing this interview has really re-inspired me to think, like, why have I not been back to a county fair since I was 10 years old? And I really appreciated hearing about something that's important in your life. And I'm curious if you could just, why is this important for you? But also, what does it have to do with Food and Faith and this podcast? If you just share a little bit with our listeners about where you see the spirituality and the connection to faith at a county fair.
Yeah, so I'm disappointed to hear that you don't have a super duper craving for deep fried Oreos. Like, that's usually why people show up.
Yeah.
If there's no animal thing, there's that, which I don't particularly like either. But
yeah,
all
I've
of that is
funnel cakes too.
Yeah, the funnel cakes, and then there's always a good meat platter. We apologize to our vegan listeners, but there's always
I'll take the meat platter. Cause
there we go.
I'll go for the meat platter.
Rock and roll. But yeah, for me, certainly it plays into my own history and my own roots that my wife and I, Jenny, were both 4-H'ers, and that's how we met. In fact, we don't remember how we met. We just know that we were at a county fair together and started sharing experiences together. And I think there's a lot of that kind of wrapped up in why I see a spirituality in county fairs, is that it is fundamentally relational building. It's about building relationships, and it's about a common purpose, at a county fair, it's particularly around agriculture, but that we're all participating in this life or this lifestyle together, and we're building relationships there, and that is, for a pastor, a really fertile ground to talk about spirituality. How do we think deeply about the community? How do we think deeply about the decisions that we make as a community, about what we value, who gets to be a part of that, what our highest aspirations are, like what is it that we hope to do as a part of being a part of this community? And so it doesn't have to be a county fair, but for me, county fairs always made sense as a place to think deeply about these questions. I used to work in a different ministry as a parachurch ministry, and just sometimes working in that ministry was really hard for me to figure out. Like, I'm not sure where Jesus kind of fits in all this, but when I would come back home and got a chance to be a part of the fair, I said, there's a little bit of church here. And some of it is, you know, the liturgies that happen and the dances that happen felt like church. Like, we all kind of knew where to go and what to say and what to do. It also came with the requisite kind of challenges of living in community that churches often bring. And so I don't know, but for me, there was always a deep sense of spirituality there. And I think as people who are interested in agriculture, who are interested perhaps in rural life, as I am, being particularly attentive to these places makes a lot of sense in terms of thinking about what the future is going to be. In terms of how we practice agriculture, what does the future agriculture look like, which means what does the future of food look like, which ultimately means what does the future of our communities look like. So it's a super inspiring place for me to be at least once a year, if not more. And so I'm really glad to be able to share a little bit of my experience with the county fair.
Well, I really appreciate listening to the interview, and I hope that our listeners will as well. And I think that there's something powerful about deeply listening to a experience and a culture and a community that you may or may not be familiar with. I don't have as much of a familiarity, obviously, with that world, but it resonated deeply as I heard you and Jennifer in conversation, and opens up some different questions and insights. So I really highly commend this episode to our listeners, and in particular those who maybe don't have an experience with rural agriculture and rural ministry, to listen for the lessons and the insights and the gems that can help us to understand another culture, but also to understand our own setting as well. So I invite you to be part of this conversation with Jennifer Reynolds and with co-host Sam.
I want to welcome my dear friend, I'd say mentor as well, in so many ways, Jennifer Reynolds, to the pod. And thank you so much for spending a little bit of time in the middle of a week of insanity for the both of us. I don't know about you. I'm covered in sweat and crud. That's just a fair reality. So
yeah, sweat, mud, not so much other crud yet, but it's early. There's still time.
This evening, I've got things to push around. So mm-hmm. I'm sure by the end of the evening,
the shower will be necessary.
So we're going to have a conversation just because we're sitting here at a event in a place that's very important to both of us, the Carroll County 4-H and FFA Fair, to talk about county fairs a little bit. And certainly you have experience with county fairs in a variety of ways. And so I'd love for you to share just a little about who you are, what you do, and why places like the fair matter to you. Why are you here?
Why am I here? Okay, so starting from the very beginning, I guess, I grew up in a family that was very involved in 4-H and had been for generations. My grandmother worked in our county extension office, so we had that family connection to extension in general and the 4-H program in particular as well. And when I was looking at what do I want to do with my life, even in high school and through college's careers, I'm working in extension in some fashion was always on the table as an option for me because I was familiar enough with it and the kind of work that it is and the informal education aspects of it appealed to me. The not always being at a desk pieces of it appealed to me. So time and circumstance brought me here to Carroll County, and I was able to work with this 4-H program and fair for a little over 10 years, and then moved on to some different roles where I still work with state 4-H programs and events, so I get to add some other county and state fair activities to my working piece of who I am. And then volunteer-wise, still get to come here and do some volunteering too, which is really good and important to me to keep those connections here where I live.
And so your working piece now, where are you? What are you up to?
Oh, so working now, I am in the Animal and Avian Science Building at the University of Maryland, and I coordinate the Equine and Poultry Extension Programs, which is kind of a mouthful. I tell people that are outside of that world and unfamiliar with it, the best way I can describe what I do regularly is I'm an educational event planner. So I help make sure that the seminars and workshops and other educational forms, we're looking at doing some more on video and other formats, other media, that are made available to the public versus just enrolled university students. So it's the extension arm of that.
So what did you do to get equine and poultry shoved into the same job?
That's a fabulous question. That was how it was written up. Those are two really huge animal agriculture industries here in Maryland. And we have professors and programs on campus that focus on both of those areas. So at the time, those were the needs. And I guess financially, it suited them to kind of combine them together rather than have a separate person for each one. So luckily for me, I had enough of a background in both that it, while there's always new things and always aspects of them that I'm not, you know, hugely comfortable and familiar with, I know enough that I can kind of get by and work through both of those species and at least get to the right people when questions arise and things like that. So it is kind of fun to have such very disparate sort of species to work with because right when you've had enough of one, you know, the other one is so very different and the industries are so very different. So one of those things that just worked out, I guess.
So like I said, we're here just talking about county fairs, and you shared some interesting, you know, just your background. And before we turned it on, you were telling me a story about.
Oh yeah, so my beginnings of county fairs. Yeah. I have. I remember I grew up in a county fair that was very small, only actually lasted 3 days, just a weekend fair basically. Where? In South Jersey. Yeah, Atlantic County, New Jersey, and it's still there. It still exists. It's just a shorter fair. So when I was very, very small, before I was old enough to be in 4-H, maybe 3 or 4, I have a picture of the first year that my mom took me out to the county fair, and I'm in a dairy goat pen. So, yes. Of course, that was personally relevant to Sam, that I'm in a dairy goat pen with dairy goats nibbling on my hair. And my mom would tell me about how I didn't want to be pulled out and pulled away and just wanted to stay in there with those goats and with those animals. And then all growing up, even though the club I was in, my mom was a club leader, and we were really more of a local craft and citizenship and, you know, a local community club. We didn't focus on animals in particular, but that was where kind of my interest and heart was. So as much as I could get away and be in those animal barns and the horse barns and watching those shows for those days, I was. And it was being a smaller fair and a community fair, similar sort of to what we have here, but again, much, much smaller. We could be our little fair rat selves and just be turned loose to roam. So I got to do a lot of that roaming until I convinced my parents that we could at least, if we couldn't have any of the other bigger animals at home to raise, we could at least have rabbits. So we started off in the rabbit project area, and that was kind of my first intro to my own production animal agriculture, was with our rabbit project.
Now with your rabbit project, were you going end to end where you were breeding and then ultimately to butchering, and so doing the entire spectrum?
Yeah, we had both. We actually had a few different breeds over the years. We had Angora rabbits for a while, and of course they're not really typically a meat breed. They're a wool fiber breed. So with them, it was all about the fiber. Angora rabbits have a difficult time in hot and humid climates, and we struggled in a few summers with them, just keeping them calm and cool and comfortable. And they do require a lot of upkeep and maintenance. And then after a particularly difficult year, we decided maybe we'd look into something with a more normal traditional coat and get away from the fiber aspect. And so we did switch over to a meat breed. And I raised Crème d'Argents, which are a more unusual meat breed, especially now. But at the time, there were a few around. And so, yeah, we started with a trio, a buck and two does, and started breeding and raising them, and then kept the good ones back to go back into that breeding program. And the other ones became the meat pens. And so we kind of did the whole full circle of everything from breeding decisions to exhibiting to to then being able to use the meat from the ones that were that needed to go that direction. So it was a great project to grow up being able to do, for sure.
Yeah, and I know some of those sort of, for lack of a better term, sort of smaller projects are easier on-ramps. I know for me, with the dairy goats, you know, we had the dairy goat show, and that was great, and, you know, it was all about, you know, we would do our breeding, and it was all about production. How big of an udder could you put on this thing? How much milk are you getting out of it? But then, at least when I was in it, we had this, we had this market goat show kind of stuck in the middle of the dairy goat show. And I remember every year we would just, we would band a couple of bucks, bring a couple of wethers in, feed them out, and just see what would happen. Although I have to tell you, I'm still bitter that there was the one year I had champion heavyweight market goat and lost to the middleweight.
Oh.
Which still to this day, because at that time we only sold the one animal at the livestock auction. So I was like, all right, it's this free animal we were going to feed it anyway, you know. So I'm like, I'm going to get a couple of bucks out of this, like, go figure. And then this scrawny little middleweight comes in and beats me. But I guess those are the stories that emerge.
Well, and how far have we come now with a whole separate meat goat division and those dairy bred meat goats? Really, you know, aren't nearly at all as it's a whole different world of meat goat showing now compared to, and such a relatively short time.
Yeah.
It's really a whole section of animal production that's taken off tremendously in the last few years. So
yeah, you know, and the conversation around our tent has been that there's more market goats than sheep here, which is an unthinkable thing a couple of years ago.
It is. So it was a little surprising to me too.
So, but you know, I mean, we dive into, you know. The reason we want to have this conversation is that we dive into sort of the stories and the memories that happen around county fairs, and just how they occupy sort of a central space in agricultural communities. There's something special about being at these places. And you and I have shared conversations, you know, over meals or, you know, just hanging around a hog pen or whatever, and just talking about why we do keep coming back and what is so important about county fairs just as a reality in an agricultural / rural world. You know, and I'm interested in just sort of your thoughts as to there's something special about this place. What is it that makes these places so special?
What is it? I think some of it has to do with why county fairs, like, if you think back to the very beginning of why county fairs ever happened to start with, and that they were ways of bringing communities together. You know, people didn't have the accessibility to each other that we have today. And even just distance and trying to travel was so much more difficult than what we're able to do today. So it was that one time of a year for everybody to get together and sort of show off what they were able to produce, maybe what they were able to do, and visit and interact and socialize and have those conversations and bonds and just that fellowship. And even though we have so much of an easier time of all of the transportation issues today, and we aren't traveling as great of distances to get to a fair like this, we see each other more often, it still is that culmination of all of a year's efforts. And so showing off what you've done, what you've produced, what you've raised, what you've grown, what you've made, depending on what department you're exhibiting in, and those, and being able to visit and interact with folks that you don't see as much as you might like to sometimes, or from different parts of the county, or even just, you're getting a full week to be able to do that. And I think too, there's a piece of that and I think, as we've talked before, there's the deep root piece of that in rural communities in particular, where you do have generations of families that have been doing this. So it becomes a tradition for your personal family to do as well. And maybe there's a relative's recipe that is always entered in the cake auction or one of the baking competitions year after year after year, or well, we always had this breed of livestock animal to exhibit, so there's always going to be a chamberlain showing a dairy goat or whatever it might be. You know, I think there's something that keeps that connection for us too, that whether we know it or not, we crave and cling to, you know, in our essence, even if we're not always cognitively aware of it.
Yeah, I found just being around here that it often does function like church. It's almost like this is Christmas season in a church where, you know, we're all hanging out and we're catching back up, you know, and wishing each other well and all that kind of stuff, you know. And you talk about sort of reaching back generationally. I mean, I'm just coming to this place always reminds me of just sort of my own heritage, that my grandparents met in 4-H. Mm-hmm. They were in the same 4-H club, and they ended up getting married, and my mother was in 4-H. And then Jenny and I, my wife and I, met each other in 4-H, and now my kids are in it, and it's like this, it's almost like this is how we are as a family, like this is what has shaped us and molded us, which feels very spiritual at the end of the day. Like, what are these forces that make us who we are? How do we reach back into what we've been and to acknowledge mm-hmm. that and to own that? And I think in its positive and its negative things, just kind of owning who and what we are. But I think there's also a wonderful sort of progressiveness to it, is that, you know, we're not yet fully formed. I mean, even our food production, there's new ways of producing food. There's new things we're thinking about, new challenges we have to face. And so it's this equal paradox of old and new that kind of collide in these spaces.
Yeah, well, and there's changes as much as there's the traditions that go on year after year. There's always, there have to be changes just sometimes in the way things are done, or how that. So then you start these new traditions, or, you know, and as new families and new people come in with different ways of looking at things or trying to set things up. So there's other opportunities within the fair. So then you start some of the new things too. So yeah, I think some of that old and new tradition, you know, keeping and starting plays a part in that too. And
so what would be the biggest sort of change or move in the last sort of decade or so in agriculture you've seen kind of play out in
agriculture in general, or fairs
of how fairs can sort of bring out challenges or developments?
Yeah, I think, and again, you know, we could go on about so many offshoots of some of these topics, but I think part of a lot of county fairs is that as we become more urbanized and families are coming from very different places and not necessarily from true farm working farm living situations, and maybe are more removed from that. Maybe they've never been a part of that, but they're seeking that out, and they're seeking out some of those connections and experiences that they want for their children. So you're bringing in some of these new people and trying to help them fit into that, or see where they can fit in and how they would like to fit in and what kinds of project areas to do. And they didn't necessarily grow up like we did with that generational background. Sure. in the program at all, in a 4-H program or in any kind of agricultural sort of living at all. So bringing them back in is challenging but great at the same time, you know, to make sure that they are getting those connections and learning more about how some of these organizations that offer such great things for kids, but also the connection to agriculture and rural communities that you get through that. So that's both a challenge and kind of an exciting thing, and definitely a change. You know, it's not that all families are coming from production agriculture backgrounds anymore that are participating in this. In fact, I would say now the majority of them are not, probably. So yeah, definitely some challenges and opportunities that come with that. That's probably one of the bigger sort of overall things. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Is there something else that you think of that's changed the most?
I don't know. I mean, I'm fascinated by that. Because like the one project area that never existed, at least at this fair, that mm-hmm. now is all the rage, is robotics.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
Like, yeah. All of a sudden, I mean, we got all these kids running around who are just these tiny little geniuses mm-hmm. all over the place building.
They are brilliant. Oh, my gosh. It's a little intimidating good they are.
When the robots roll in and it's just that tent is just full.
Yeah.
All day long with kids. I mean, yeah. Game controller, and they're doing battle bots or whatever in the world. They're
yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. And they really can do some amazing things and are, they're way more technologically savvy than I am. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point. I think, the 4-H program in general, and again, as our communities are becoming more suburban and urbanized, and we have folks that have more interest in some of these other project areas and learning different kinds of things. And I think it's a great program that we've been able to really embrace and do well in this state. We happen to have some fabulous volunteers that are so knowledgeable about that stuff here in Maryland. And so that's allowed that program throughout the state to really thrive, but particularly here in this county. And it does offer something different for those kids that really have an interest in that engineering aspect of it, or maybe the computer science aspect of it, or some of the programming that they need to do. And yeah, it's, you're right. So some of those project areas have maybe developed or grown that wouldn't have years ago when we did have, again, maybe just a different kind of community base of interest.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and that's what fascinates me is mm-hmm. as you're sort of sharing that, and you've worked with those kids closer than mm-hmm. I have. You've kind of been up close and you sort of watch that program develop, is that it is a very different kind of child that kind of comes to mm-hmm. that program. But inadvertently, I mean, just by being a part of the 4-H program, you're going to butt up against agriculture. And we have all these kids who are like, oh, wait a second, I can go play with the hogs. Wait a second, I can have a pig. I mean, those kind of conversations. And so we have, there was sort of this generational gap in agriculture mm-hmm. that now we have families and kids that want to get in but don't have the sort of that family history, those generational realities, you know, a farm, land, all that kind of stuff that they can naturally get in that. And so figuring out how we navigate that and help people be a part of that is a challenge. And what I hear is an analogy to the church.
Yeah.
Is that we have had this generation where people sort of left the church, but now mm-hmm. people are saying, well, wait a second, there's something really valuable about my spirituality. I want to come back into the church, but they don't understand sort of a language around that. And so there's this kind of fracture that needs to be repaired. Mm-hmm. And I think the work that we do in 4-H, at county fairs, you know, in mm-hmm. rural communities, sort of navigating a changing demographic with still these very old school desires to participate in food mm-hmm. production and to learn about sort of the natural world and agriculture and all those kind of things. I think it's a fascinating experience.
You're right. It is very similar in the sense that you do get, and I include myself in this because it's an easy trap to fall into. You kind of get into an inside and us versus them mentality, not necessarily aggressively, but just in that, you know, we've been doing this and we know what we're doing. Our families have done this forever. And yeah, the new people coming in, it can be a hard click to break into when you don't know the inside stories or that who's related to who and why.
I'm not this family.
Yeah. And you're right. I think it can be very similar to trying to find your place in a church when you've been away or you're trying to figure out where you fit in now. And we can tend to get very much like that in those circles too, where new people, we say we want new people. Yeah. And even in a lot of our agriculture organizations or things that we're doing, you know, we say we want to bring more people in, but are we really doing the kinds of things we need to be doing to welcome them in and help them come into that in a good and healthy and productive way? Yeah. Or are we just kind of giving them just enough that they never fully fit in comfortably and right, yeah. you know? So then they end up leaving or not getting as much out of it as they could and not bringing for us what maybe they would be able to offer if yeah. we would let them in. But I think you're right. There's probably a lot of similarities there.
And I would say, you probably wouldn't say, I know you well. But I would say that, I mean, you're a bit of an expert in this, in that the way that working with such disparate children and families in 4-H and making it work here in this county, that's such a unique skill. Like there are very few generalists kind of in the world, and you kind of have to be a little bit of a jack of all trades to do that. I mean, and shoot, you're still doing that with equine and poultry in the same job description, you know. And so one of the reasons that has worked is because you fostered these spaces where the community comes together, and you've been a part of that, mm-hmm. a part of fostering that. And so that's something I've admired about you is, you know, that there are agricultural kids like me who meet these sort of these strange kids from the city, as much yes. as we have a city here, and we yeah. find ways to make it work, and we take an interest in one another. And I think, you know, and one of the things that I step back as I get a little older is I'm like, wow, in these really sort of rural areas, we found ways to be really inclusive and inviting of a lot of different people, and they all kind of collide here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just value your experience in that. I don't know if you have anything you want to say to that, like how you navigated that as an educator.
I don't claim to have any expertise for sure. But I think honestly that that's one of probably the maybe less, I don't want to say unsung, but maybe less heralded good points about a program like the 4-H program in general. And since we're here at a 4-H and FFA too, but particularly 4-H, because that program, you know, we have youth from sometimes 5-year-olds even up till 18. So it's a big portion of your growing up life. And because there are so many project area opportunities to involve kids in and volunteers, and when you have a diverse area, if you can get those really good volunteers and parents and folks to help, you know, put a program together and there's interest, then you can provide these opportunities for the kids that are interested in them to do it. And then having fairs, like you said, like this gives everyone a chance to sort of see, oh, this is 4-H too, or these. And honestly, I think programs like you participated in our ambassador program, you know, where we're able to select some of those teenagers who've excelled in maybe a particular area, but they're all in different areas, and bring them together and have them work as kind of a youth leadership team. But yeah, you get to meet and work with, you know, kids who have very different interests and activities and specialties and areas that they really want to pursue. And kind of, yeah, in valuing each other, you can understand a little bit better what they're doing and valuing what they do too. So both ways, you know, yeah. And they can see what the more ag oriented farm kids, you know, for lack of a better term, are doing, and why they do what they do the way they do it too, which we know is super important in helping the rest of the public understand.
Well, back in the day, I mean, around here when we had the multiple barns per species, I mean, some of my best friends were showing swine, sheep, beef. Well, they were in a different barn. It might as well have been on a different continent.
It was a lot harder to mix.
You know, the old stories about there used to be the water fights afterwards between the dairy and the market kids.
Like, yeah.
Dairy kids were hanging out with dairy kids, and market kids were hanging out with market kids. So we were even in kind of the same world, but not communicating, or at least not being in close enough proximity to one another to actually get to know one another. And so, you know, but yeah, meeting some dairy cattle kids and meeting some swine kids and some beef kids and just discovering just super awesome people in that process.
Oh, definitely. You
know, through sort of getting up out of the project and getting into more of a development space where we're working together was super important for me. Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, some of my best childhood memories still form me in really important ways.
Well, and I can say, I know for me, what helping, you know, even just from the volunteer and, you know, the grown-up person helping make things happen perspective, it was always great for me to see when we would have our camp kids that maybe only worked in our camp program and, you know, played in that venue, and our quote-unquote indoor building kids, you know, who the arts, crafts, clothing, baking, etc., when they would come and do their piece of the fair, but then they'd come down and watch their friends show in the livestock shows, or come and hang out with them, or come to some of the entertainment events with their friends that were here exhibiting the rest of the week. And it was always really great to see that crossover, you know, especially in our camp kids that really, again, because we had so many that just did that one program, to have them come back, or the robotics, other ones. So I think that's super cool too, to see the ones that come back and cross over outside of just their event when they don't need to be here all week, like some of the animal project kids do. Even our horse kids, they come and show and leave, but that they'll come back and visit and hang out and watch and cheer on their friends that do other things. Very cool.
Yeah, no, it, like I said, super special memories. I think agriculture, this is one of the things that sort of drives my life in ministry, is that agriculture in a lot of ways is saying, well, wait a second, we're out in front in terms of forcing people to work together towards a common purpose. A purpose is bigger than any of us. And so learning those lessons as a child, you know, at a young age, I think was super important for me. And those kind of things still unfold at these fairs. Now, I want to ask you sort of the reverse, okay? We talked about new kids.
Okay.
But when we come to these places, like, I am on, like, the the generational scale here. Like I said, I mean, my family goes back in Carroll County ways. There are families at this fair now that go way farther back than mine do. Mm-hmm. And so, and that experience and that commitment to a place and mm-hmm. commitment to a family and all of that, like all of that is really, really important. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of reasons to value that. There's mm-hmm. also a lot of reasons, I think, to you know, there are a lot of pitfalls in that too. Mm-hmm. And so what would you say to, you know, people who've been here forever and they look around and go, well, gee, the place we've called home is changing so quickly that there are these traditions and norms that no longer seem to matter, or that people who move here, you know, and are taking up farmland, or you know, mm-hmm. or have these weird ideas about agriculture, you know, around here sometimes to drop the term of sustainable agriculture will get you some funny looks from people who have been doing stuff. So, you know, but and there is sort of a power dynamic there at times. Yeah, we've been here forever and we've survived because we've done things a certain way. To suggest that we do it a different way can be threatening. So, you know, I'm sure right. you've experienced that.
Yeah. And I think we do need to value the fact that, you know, if you're, for example, if you're a century farm family and you've been able to maintain and keep a farm in your family for over 100 years, you know, then there's something that I think you have to call sustainable about that in some way. So I think, you know, yeah, I think sometimes even the language itself just grates, you know, some people if they don't understand exactly, you know, if you're using those terms in a way that like, wait a minute, you know, how is this not sustainable?
Yeah.
But that's a little bit of a different rant. I think it's always hard to see things even for some of us that are a little change averse. It's hard to see even things like certain departments or project areas drop down in participation. Yeah. Like we talked earlier this week about the numbers of certain things that drop down, and remembering what some of our indoor entry building set up years looked like in terms of numbers and
shelving.
Yes, the shelving. And now, you know, what we have today and the same really probably across the board, you know, there's always that little bit of ebb and flow of things. So definitely for those long time families, I'm sure to see some of that change. I think in particular, and I'm sure when you're talking about that, you can mean some of our dairy farm families who have been here for so many generations, and then seeing the struggles that our dairy industry has and the number of farms dwindling, and therefore then the number of entries and kids and families that can even participate in that dwindling has got to be difficult to see and hard to figure out kind of maybe how to emotionally deal with too. I don't know that I have a lot of answers for what to tell them. I mean, I think ultimately everyone knows that change is an inevitable state of living. If things are static, you're never static unless you're dead, right? You're always, if you're alive, you know, living things always are in some state of change. But that doesn't make it easier sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think for the most part, even the older families, it's really the underlying values that are super important to everyone. So even as new people come in and new project areas come in, it may be a little wonky to get used to. But when you see that these families and kids, you know, sort of embrace the same values and at least can understand and appreciate maybe some of that history and the more traditional stuff too, can make it transition a little bit better and can smooth that a little bit. I don't know if that answers your question or if...
No, I think it does. I like just the fact that we're still sitting here, this fair is... I remember the 100th fair, and that was a while ago now.
Yeah, so, I want to say, what did they say? We're coming up on 125, 150? I can't remember. We're coming up 125 in a few years?
So just the fact that, I mean the very notion of a county fair is kind of this old throwback kind of thing. And here we still sit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it is because people still care about agriculture. Like, as much as the narrative is that it's dying, and certainly there are
narratives that are accurate. I mean, mm-hmm. you mentioned dairy farming and just mm-hmm. what a challenge that is, at least on the Eastern Seaboard, I'm sure across the country, you know.
Yeah.
But people still care. Right. And they're still coming to agricultural areas and the conversations around food mm-hmm. and land and environment and all those things are still ongoing. Mm-hmm. And those conversations can oftentimes come to a head at these places. Mm-hmm. So when I want to be like, man, I just don't understand sometimes what is happening, well, at least people are still showing up around the table. And as long as there's a table, yeah. as long as there's a place for us to gather, mm-hmm. we'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. You know, it may be clumsy at times, and we may throw water balloons at each other in a certain yeah. way of speaking. But we'll still figure it out. And so these places, you know, even being one of those families who sometimes like, man, it's just not the way it used to be. Well, there's still a hope that well, we're still trying to figure it out, and people still want to be a part of the conversation.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And the fact that as we had said, there are these new people that are coming back, you know, or they're seeing it, that maybe their families had been removed, like that we had talked about, that are that generation or so removed, or maybe were from different areas that are seeing it and wanting to be involved. And there's still, you know, we've been here for a full week and you come out and there's always people there. It's always busy. There's things going on. And for your listeners that may not know, you know, this is a pretty traditional county fair in the sense that there's no midway and rides for people and families to come do. They've been pretty hardcore on avoiding that. So while there's some entertainment, singing and, you know, other kinds of entertainment, there's a horse pull. There's no Ferris wheel. There's no games of chance. There's no, you know, there's none of that, to carnival piece of it to try to draw people in. So we're still getting the turnouts that we are, and the community support, we have a cake auction, yes, where the kids sell their prize baked goods, and that serves as a fundraiser for the fair itself. And we had a record amount of money come in this year because of the businesses in the community that decided they wanted to get together and support this. And they, you know, turned it into their own kind of little game to see who could spend the most money. But that's the fact that the community is valuing it too, and those businesses are valuing it, and then hopefully, you know, participants then. I think that's the part of it to me, is that a fair really generates that whole community feel that we lose so much because of how fragmented we are in our lives. We go to work, we come home, we think our community is a Facebook group or, you know, Instagram. But this really brings community back to being interpersonal and actual, you know, physical relationships, visiting with people, seeing them, getting to meet, you know, the person who owns the company that bought the cake, you know, instead of just seeing their name, you know, or going to the business, and really, yeah, puts that personal touch back into being a part of a community. And I think people are really craving that sense of belonging, which we tout both in 4-H, but also in the church, that it's, you know, really people, they need that. Mm-hmm. And again, as we've become so connected through technology, but so isolated individually, and this is not at all isolating, if anything. No. If anything, by the end of the week, everyone needs a little alone time. But it's, and I get that. Yeah. But I think that's one of the best and most important things about why fairs matter and why it's important that we continue to try to support them and make them still happen and have these places where this can happen.
Little side note, the grand champion went for $12,000.
$12,000. Yeah.
Feeling pretty good about it. But that's one of the, and like, I think you spoke really well to it. One of the things that I often caution people who are hyper focused on how do we develop community is that that's probably not the right language to use. The community already exists. It's, do you want to be mm-hmm. a part of the community that's actually there? Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean the community that actually is there is ideal or perfect or has it all together. You know, and certainly Carroll County has, you know, has its own sort of way of being. Mm-hmm. And I love it, and it drives me crazy at the same time. But there is real community here. You know, absolutely. And so the notion of saying, well, you know, we need to develop a community, well, that comes across wrong, because there's a lot of us who have been doing it a long time, and there's so much to love about it, and inviting other people to come in and to see it and to join us in loving this imperfect, this imperfect thing that we call community.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's so much of what a county fair is about.
Yeah. Well, I think, and yeah, earlier in the week, we had mentioned that, you know, the fairs bring out the best and worst in everybody, all sometimes in the course of one day,
yeah.
Definitely within the course of a week. But that's part of it, too, I think. You know, yeah, you get to see everybody at their very best, sometimes at their not so best.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, it's still, you're still in it together, you know, whether you're working towards, you know, exhibiting within a department or a species and everybody's trying to make that go well, or if it's the fair as a whole, everybody is kind of a piece of something bigger than themselves in something like this. And, and I think that relates in a lot of different directions too.
It does. So, well, hey, I've kept you longer than I intended.
No problem.
But we do like to end. We like to end on a positive note and say it just in the context. It can be in the context of this. It can be in the context of whatever you want. What gives you hope?
What gives me hope?
What gives you hope? I didn't tell you.
No. That's okay. I'm just like, deep, thoughtsy kind of question. Oh
this
my goodness.
End.
Oh, what gives me hope? I think. And it relates to what we've been talking. I think the fact that, for me, that working out of the county now and not getting to always interact with these people in the same day to day way that maybe I did at one point, but still living here and being a part of this community, there is room. You can come home again, I guess. You know, there's room to still be a part and be embraced and. Give back and be given back to while you're doing it, even if you're not able to participate in maybe the exact same way. Now I'm gonna cry, but no, the fact that, like you said, we have amazing, great people here, and if you let yourself be involved, if you put yourself out there in those situations, you can really see that, and you can see that. Whether you realized it or, you know, when you're thinking, oh my gosh, no, it's all terrible. And yet you can see these little moments all the time of just, really great, amazing, empowering things going on that people are doing, that their kids are doing. And you're like, okay, yeah, well, you know, I think we'll be okay. There's good stuff too.
It's a good place to be. So, well, just the fact that you for so long created a good space for me to be makes this a super special this time to spend with you. So thank you for spending a couple minutes
Thank
with
you.
Me
and for your this was fun.
And for your continued service to agriculture. And you have already mentioned throughout the week at least 5 different topics that you're like, you know what, different times. So we may have to capture those rants.
Yeah,
so,
we should.
So yeah, so we'll hang out.
But please, anytime.
It's the best. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for doing this.
Thanks for listening to the Food and Faith Podcast. Our collaborators are Wake Forest University School of Divinity, Plainsong Farm, Garden Church, and The Keep and Till. And the music is by Paul Diemer. Follow along and keep up to date with the podcast on Facebook at Food and Faith Podcast, Twitter and Instagram at Food and Faith Pod, or on our website at foodandfaithpodcast.org.